It was after midnight, and a gentle rain had started to fall, when Vince Parmalee rode down an alley in Salina, Kansas, the nearest town to the farming community of Elysium. The railroad passed through Salina, too, and had an office building there. That building was the one Parmalee rode behind now. The window he sought glowed yellow with lamplight, despite the lateness of the hour. To get what you wanted in this world, sometimes you had to burn the candle at both ends, Parmalee thought. Parmalee brought his horse to a stop beside the lighted window and reached up to rap sharply on the glass. The man inside the building lifted a hand in acknowledgement of Parmalee's presence and walked out of sight. Parmalee turned his horse and rode a short distance back along the alley to a door.
Come in.
Parmalee stepped into the building and shook himself like a dog, causing the well-dressed man who had opened the door to move back with a look of distaste on his carefully barbered face.
Was that absolutely necessary?
I'm the one who was out in the rain doing your errands, Carter. Seems to me like you ought to be a little grateful.
You don't need gratitude. You've been paid plenty of the railroad's money, so that should suffice.
Yeah, I suppose it does.
Carter's mouth tightened, but he didn't say anything. An air of tension existed between the two men, as if they hadn't quite worked out which one of them was really the top dog around here. Carter paid the bills, sure, but he was a paper pusher and wouldn't amount to anything without Parmalee's guns to back him up. At least, that was the way Parmalee saw it.
Have a seat. Well, how did it go? Were you able to inflict enough damage on those troublemaking bastards to scare them off? Was anyone killed?
You know, sometimes I'm not sure what answer you want to hear when you ask that kind of question.
Just answer it.
Two of my men, and three more wounded, plus Bonner's disappeared. I don't know where the hell he is.
My God. What happened?
Somebody horned in on our play. We stopped at Fulton Creek to let the horses drink, and Bonner thought he saw a light, like somebody was there. I figured he was just imagining things. Bonner's a mite high strung. But I told him to stay there and take a look around just in case. Best I can figure out, somebody jumped him, probably knocked him out or maybe killed him, and caught up to us and took his place. When we hit the sodbusters, whoever it was pretending to be Bonner hit us.
Oh, this is terrible. Just terrible.
I'm not too happy about the way it turned out myself.
For a few minutes, the two men sat there in silence. It would have been hard to find two men less alike. Parmalee was burly and broad-shouldered, with a beefy face made rugged by long exposure to wind and weather. Carter was much smaller and slender, except for a little pot belly. His brown hair was slicked down, and he sported a neatly trimmed Van Dyke beard.
You have no idea who this interloper was?
He was wearing what I guess was Bonner's mask when he joined us. I never got a good look at his face, but whoever he is, he's mighty good with a six-gun.
Did you inflict any damage on the farmers?
I think one man got creased and we killed a couple of milk cows. That's about it.
Is it possible Duncan and the others brought in a gunman of their own to combat you and your men?
I suppose it's possible. I haven't heard anything about anybody like that heading this way, though.
Well, you don't know every gunman in the West, surely.
No. But it's a smaller crowd than it used to be.
As Parmalee spoke, his eyes grew distant, as if he were peering back into the past, when the frontier had been a much wilder place. But a better place, as far as Parmalee was concerned. Too much of the time now, little pissants like Carter wielded the real power, and men such as Parmalee, men accustomed to making their way through life with fist and gun and iron will, were relegated to being afterthoughts and last resorts.
I know most of them.
What really concerns me is this man Bonner you mentioned. Do you think he was taken prisoner?
I don't know. I went back to the spot where we left him, but he wasn't anywhere around. I don't know what happened to him.
If he's fallen into the hands of our enemies, will he talk?
Tell the law about you and me, you mean?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm worried about.
I don't know. I've worked with Bonner before. He's a pretty good man. But you never know what somebody else would do to save their own hide. I thought you said we didn't have to worry about the law.
Well, the railroad exerts considerable influence over the political process in this state, just as they do in other states. No elected official wants to get on the railroad's bad side. But if there was direct evidence against us, if there was testimony asserting that we're to blame for all the problems that have been plaguing those farmers, up to and including attempted murder, well, I don't know what the authorities would do. They might try to move against us.
Then it sounds to me like we need to find out what happened to Bonner. If he's dead, we don't have to worry about him talking.
But if Duncan and the others have him?
Weren't you listening? I said if he's dead, we don't have to worry about him.
Huh. Now I understand. And I fully agree.
Frank put up his horses in Horace Duncan's barn and spent the night in the hayloft, since Bonner was in Horace's spare bedroom. He didn't turn in for the night, though, until he was satisfied that Horace understood the importance of keeping Bonner under guard at all times. Frank slept well, and when he went into the kitchen of the Duncan farmhouse the next morning, he was ready for the coffee he smelled brewing and the bacon sizzling on the stove.
Good morning, Mr. Morgan. Have a seat. Did you sleep well?
Yes, ma'am. It rained some during the night. Nothing more soothing than the sound of rain on a barn roof.
Yes, we get a good bit of rain around here. Helps the crops. Here, you can get started with this coffee. I'm getting a plate ready for that wounded man, and then I'll see about your breakfast.
Where's your husband?
Oh, Horace has been up for hours. He's already gone out to check on the fields.
As Frank sat there, he tried not to watch Mildred Duncan going about her work, but it was difficult not to. She was a fine-looking woman. Not that Frank had any improper thoughts where she was concerned, her being a married woman and all. As he looked at her, though, he couldn't help but think what things might have been like if it had worked out so that he could have married a nice-looking woman and lived like a normal man. He had loved three women in his life and married two of them. Those two had both died violent deaths. The other had spent most of her life happily married to another man, raising a daughter who might or might not be Frank's. Something had always interfered with his plans for happiness, and he knew what it was. The blinding speed of his draw, the uncanny coordination of hand and eye, everything that went into making him one of the deadliest men ever to strap on a gun. That skill and the reputation it brought with it had always loomed over Frank's life ever since he was a young man.
My goodness, Mr. Morgan, you look positively grim.
Sorry, ma'am. I reckon I just haven't had enough of this fine coffee yet. Not quite woke up good, I guess.
Well, I have Mr. Bonner's tray ready. I'll take it in to him.
I'll come with you.
They walked down the hall to the spare bedroom. One man sat on a straight chair outside the door, a rifle across his knees. He stood up and nodded politely to Mildred as she approached it. Inside the room were two more guards, both armed with shotguns. Frank was pleased and impressed by the seriousness with which the farmers were taking this matter.
You got no right to keep me locked up here. This ain't a jail, and you people ain't the law.
We could have left you out there to bleed to death on that creek bank. It could still be arranged if that's what you want.
Oh, now nobody's gonna bleed to death.
She leaned over to place the tray containing a plate of food and a cup of coffee on Bonner's lap.
Here, I brought you some breakfast.
Much obliged, ma'am.
You're welcome. I suppose I shouldn't be so gracious to one of Parmalee's men, but I can't help it. You're in my home, after all.
Don't know nobody named Parmalee.
Frank didn't waste his breath telling Bonner not to deny it. There was no point in trying to shake Bonner's story now. That would have to wait for the law. Frank went back to the kitchen with Mildred to have his own breakfast. And as they got there, the back door of the house opened and Horace Duncan came in, wearing overalls, work boots, and a broad-brimmed straw hat.
That rain last night did the crops a world of good. How are you today, Mr. Morgan? Sleep all right out there in the barn?
Yes, fine. And I thought you were going to call me Frank.
Yes, that's right.
Mildred put a plate of bacon, eggs, biscuits, and gravy on the table next to Frank's cup of coffee.
Here you go, Mr. Morgan.
Horace poured himself a cup of coffee as Frank began to eat. The food tasted as good as it smelled. Horace sat down across the table from Frank.
I thought I'd ride into Salina and talk to the sheriff.
That's what you need to do, all right.
I was sort of hoping you'd come with me.
I don't know if you want me to do that or not. Sometimes when a lawman finds out who I am, he gets all stiff-necked, doesn't want to listen to reason anymore. You saw the way some of your friends reacted last night when they heard my name.
Well, I think that's just foolish. Horace told me that you have a certain reputation, Mr. Morgan, but you seem like a perfectly nice man to me.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Duncan. I'd like to think I am a perfectly nice man. There's no getting around the fact that I'm known as a gunfighter. And for good reason. I've killed quite a few men.
If they were anything like the ones you shot last night, I'm sure they had it coming to them.
Frank remembered the way she had offered to shoot Bonner, and he told himself not to underestimate Mildred Duncan. Like her husband, she had sand.
I'd still like for you to come with me, Frank. I'm not that used to talking to lawmen. I could use some help.
Yeah, all right. But not until I finish this fine breakfast.
That seemed to be settled, but things didn't get a chance to play out as Frank and Horace had planned.
Horace, some riders are coming, and one of them is the sheriff.
What in the world? Why did the sheriff come out here? He doesn't even know yet what happened last night.
Regretfully, Frank pushed the rest of his food aside and got to his feet along with Horace. He had a feeling he knew what was going on. Thaddeus Carter hadn't risen to a position of importance with the railroad by being dumb. Carter wasn't going to sit back and let the farmers come after him using Bonner as a weapon. He was going to try to strike first. But before Carter did that, he had to know for sure what had happened to Bonner. Frank put his hat on and followed Horace out to the front door of the house. As they stood there waiting and watching the three men who were riding toward the settlement, Frank's brain worked swiftly.
Don't say anything about Bonner being here.
But I thought we were going to tell the sheriff all about what happened.
Not just yet. Let's just see how it plays out. I know you haven't known me for very long, Horace, but I'm asking you to trust me on this.
Well, all right. I'll follow your lead, Frank.
A moment later, the three riders arrived at the house, reining their mounts to a halt about 10 feet from Frank and Horace. Some of the other farmers had gathered behind them. Mildred came out of the house and stood on the porch. One of the men was stocky and middle-aged, with a belly that spoke of a lot of time spent behind a desk. He had a bushy black mustache and wore a flat-crowned black hat. A lawman's star was pinned to his black leather vest. The two men with the sheriff wore town suits and didn't look all that comfortable on horseback. One was older, with a Van Dyke beard, while the other wore thick spectacles and a bowler hat and had the pasty-faced look of a clerk. Frank had never seen any of the three men before, but he didn't like the looks of them, not even the sheriff.
Morning, Duncan.
Sheriff Haley, what can I do for you?
You know Mr. Carter here, I reckon.
Of course.
And this fellow with him is Mr. Shipworth. He's a lawyer, works for the railroad like Mr. Carter.
Horace nodded to the young man, but didn't say anything. The sheriff was eyeing Frank.
Looks like you got some company.
I'm an old friend of Horace's, just passing through.
The sheriff looked a little dubious, but he let that pass.
Well, the reason I'm out here is that a fella's disappeared. He was supposed to go work for Mr. Carter, but he never showed up. Name of Bonner. You wouldn't happen to have seen him, would you?
Why would I have seen him? People don't come and check with me before they go to work for the railroad.
Well, no, that's not what I meant. But this fella Bonner, he was reported to have been seen in this area yesterday. Thought he might have stopped here.
No. No one has been here other than the people who live here.
He spoke in a fairly loud voice so that the others would hear him. Frank hoped they would realize they needed to keep quiet about Bonner's presence.
What about your friend here?
Well, except for him.
Sheriff? I think you should take a look around.
Are you calling me a liar, Carter?
I feel like this man Bonner is my responsibility. And if something has happened to him, I want to know about it.
I told you, Sheriff, we haven't seen the man and don't know anything about him.
Sheriff, if you believe there's the possibility of foul play, you have a legal right to conduct a search.
Who said anything about foul play?
Nobody. But when a man disappears, I can't rule it out. Still, I don't know that I've got a good enough reason to search around here.
What about me? As a private citizen, I can do as I please, can't I? Isn't this still a free country?
You're not welcome here, Carter, and you know it. Try to step down from that horse and you'll regret it.
You heard him, Sheriff. He threatened me.
Haley looked mighty uncomfortable, and Frank could understand why. The hombre was stuck between trying to uphold the law and wanting to curry favor with an important, powerful man.
Now, I know you two have had your differences in the past.
Carter gestured to Shipworth, who lifted his hat and mopped his forehead with a handkerchief he drew out of the breast pocket of his coat. The day wasn't all that hot yet. That was a signal if Frank had ever seen one. Sure enough, a moment later he heard hoofbeats coming quickly toward the farmhouses. Carter had had men posted somewhere nearby, watching for Shipworth's signal.
Yes, we've had our differences, but it's a private dispute, Sheriff. And if you're not going to do your duty, I'll thank you not to interfere either.
I don't have to stand for that sort of talk. I'm going back to town.
With that, the sheriff wheeled his horse and rode away.
What in the world?
It's simple, Horace. The sheriff suspects something is about to happen here. and he doesn't want any part of it. He wants to be able to deny that he knew anything about it.
In other words, we're on our own.
Exactly. The sheriff is more interested in feathering his own nest than he is in enforcing the law. If you good people want help from the law, you'll be needing a U.S. Marshal.
Four riders cantered up. They were tough, gun-hung hombres. As they came to a halt beside Carter, Frank saw that he knew one of the men. He gave the man a curt nod.
Huh. Howdy, Chadbourne. Been a while.
You're acquainted with this man?
I sure am, boss. That's Frank Morgan.
I don't care who he is. I want the four of you to search these buildings and make sure Bonner isn't here anywhere. If he is, they're holding him against his will, and that gives us a legal right to find him and rescue him.
As Frank smiled thinly, Chadbourne gave a slow shake of his head.
No, sir. I don't think so.
What do you mean? I gave you an order, by God!
Chadbourne made sure his hands remained in plain sight.
Morgan's a man they call the Drifter, Mr. Carter. He's a gunfighter. I was there at Lady Arabella's place in Tuscosa the night he killed Shad Wilkerson and Shad's two brothers, in less time than it took me to tell you about it. I ain't crossing him.
Chadbourne looked directly at Frank.
You hear me, Morgan? I'm folding my hand.
I hear you. Probably a wise thing to do.
You're through, Chadbourne. Come by the office later and I'll pay you the wages you have coming.
No thanks. It ain't enough to worry about. I suddenly recollect I got business elsewhere, like maybe Idaho or Montana.
With that, Chadbourne turned his horse and rode quickly away. He didn't look back.
Are you three afraid of this fellow as well, or are you going to do your job?
The three gunnies looked warily at Frank, who stood there impassively with his thumbs still hooked in his gun belt, seemingly utterly unconcerned.
He don't look like such a much to me.
The others nodded as the lure of money overcame common sense.
If you want us to take a look around, Mr. Carter, I don't reckon he'll stop us.
Good. Start with this house.
Frank.
Don't worry, Horace. You boys see that lady on the porch?
What about her?
She's the lady of this house. And if she doesn't invite you, you're not going in there.
No? How are you going to stop us?
The punch landed so cleanly and with so much force that the man was lifted off his feet and thrown backward to come crashing down on his back. Frank was confident that he could have killed all three men in a gunfight, but he didn't want a bunch of stray lead flying around while there were so many folks standing by who could get hit by it. Frank pivoted toward another of the gunmen. He sank his right fist into that man's stomach, all the way up to the wrist. Frank put a hand on the back of the gunman's head and shoved down hard. At the same time, his knee came up. The man toppled onto his side, senseless. That left only one of the gunmen upright, and he'd had time to get his hand on the butt of his Colt. But before he could draw the gun, Frank's left hand closed around his wrist, locking it in place. Frank hit the man twice with his right hand. When Frank let go, the man fell to his knees and swayed there for a second before he pitched forward onto his face. He lay there motionless, like his two companions who were sprawled nearby.
Do something!
What do you expect me to do? I'm no barbarian to go brawling in the dirt.
Horace! You brought in a gunman to fight your battles for you, you insurrectionist rabble-rouser!
You couldn't be more wrong about everything you just said, Carter. Now I'll thank you to get off our land. You're not wanted here.
You haven't heard the last of this.
No, I expect I haven't. And more's the pity about that.
Frank took the guns from the holsters of the men he had knocked down. He handed them to Shipworth, who took them, but looked like Frank had just dumped a load of rattlesnakes in his lap. Then several of the farmers picked up the unarmed gunmen, who were starting to come around a little, and lifted them into their saddles. The men were able to stay mounted, but they were still too groggy to be any threat.
You'll be sorry!
Maybe, but not unless you come up with something more than lines from a bad melodrama.
As soon as Carter and the others were out of earshot, though, Horace turned to Frank with a worried frown on his face.
He means it, doesn't he?
Sure he does. And you saw the way that so-called sheriff acted. He's not going to stand in Carter's way, no matter what happens.
He'll send Parmalee back here with a whole army of gunmen if that's what it takes. This has gone beyond an argument over freight rates now. Carter's taking it personal, and he'll do whatever he has to in order to smash us.
That's the way it looks to me, too. That's why we have to act fast to counter his moves. I'm riding to town to send some telegrams. I know some lawyers, too, and I have a little influence with the railroad. I'm gonna wire the U.S. Marshal, too, and try to get some law in here that'll actually do what it's supposed to do.
Do you think we can hold out until the Marshal arrives?
He'll have to. Once we get Bonner into the hands of some real law, the railroad won't have any choice but to rein in Carter and Parmalee.
Mildred came down from the porch and took her husband's hand as she stood beside him.
You sound like you're making this your battle as much as it is ours, Mr. Morgan.
I did that last night when I traded lead with Parmalee's bunch, ma'am. Once you take cards in a game like this, you gotta play out the hand all the way to the big casino. I got some telegrams to send.
All right, sir.
I should tell you that I know enough Morse code to tell whether you're sending these wires exactly as written.
Sir, I take my responsibilities here very seriously.
Well, then I apologize.
Frank had ridden into Salina later that morning. The town had grown a lot since the first time he'd been there, more than 25 years earlier when he'd been a young cowboy. The railhead had long since moved on, leaving Salina to become a settled downtown, a supply center for the farms that surrounded it. That had been the fate of a lot of formerly wild and woolly cow towns in Kansas. He hadn't bothered to stop at the sheriff's office. He had already seen enough of Sheriff Haley to know that that would have been a waste of time. Instead, Frank rode directly to the local telegraph office. The telegraph operator was now burning up the wires, sending the messages Frank had given him. He had wondered if the man would be a little leery of crossing Thaddeus Carter, but the operator took his duty seriously, although he did raise his eyebrows a little at some of the wires he sent for Frank.
All done, sir.
You're very good at your job, partner. I'd appreciate your discretion regarding what I sent.
Sir, I've already told you, I am a professional.
Well, have a good day.
When that was taken care of, Frank stepped out of the depot and looked up and down the town's main street. His keen eyes searched for familiar faces. The fact that Chadbourne had been working for Carter and Parmalee meant there might be other men mixed up in this with whom Frank was acquainted. If some of them wanted to up and leave too when they found out he was involved, then so much the better. Fewer of them he had to shoot that way. Since his breakfast had been interrupted, Frank was a mite hungry. Spotting a cafe down the street, he headed for it. Instinct made the hairs on the back of his neck stand up as he walked along. Somebody was watching him. He glanced around, but didn't see anyone who seemed to be paying much attention to him. Frank knew better than to disregard what his gut told him, though. He didn't relax until he stepped into the cafe and closed the door behind him. That was when his back finally stopped feeling like it had a target painted on it.
Son of a bitch. It's him, all right.
Who?
Frank Morgan.
The famous gunfighter?
Parmalee's teeth gritted together in irritation. Morgan was famous, all right. But Parmalee wasn't convinced that Morgan was one damn bit better with a gun than him. Morgan had just been lucky, that was all.
Yeah. I'd heard he was around, but I was hoping that was wrong.
The news about Morgan's involvement had come from Carter. It was Chadbourne who had recognized Morgan in the first place. Now Chadbourne was gone. He had lit a shuck out of these parts without even coming back to Salina to claim the wages Carter owed him. Parmalee couldn't help but wonder how many more of the boys would take off for the tall and uncut if they knew there was a chance they'd be facing Frank Morgan's guns.
Are you coming back to bed? Or are you just going to stand there at the window the rest of the day?
Parmalee felt rage welling up inside him. He wanted to turn around, drag the woman from the bed, and toss her out in the hall on her bare ass. It would serve her right. But it wouldn't change anything. It wouldn't mean that things were like they used to be in the old days. No, sir. In the old days, he never would have stooped to something like bullying a bunch of sodbusters. And he wouldn't have worked for a slimy little bastard like Carter, either. That was what was really bothering him. Not anything some stupid whore said.
Get out.
What?
You heard me. Get your clothes on and get out of here. You've been paid already.
You got some more time coming.
Don't want it.
Well!
Parmalee turned back to the window and stood there staring until the woman was gone. Then he got dressed and left the hotel. Morgan had been coming out of the Western Union office when Parmalee first spotted him. Parmalee decided to go there and get some information.
Did a fella send some messages a few minutes ago?
Lots of people send messages, sir. That's why these telegraph wires are strung alongside the railroad tracks.
Parmalee picked up one of the pads of yellow message forms lying on the counter, scribbled on it with a stub of pencil that was sitting there, and then tore it off.
Here, send this.
The clerk got up from his key and stepped over to take the paper. Parmalee dropped it on the floor. When the clerk bent over to pick it up, Parmalee grabbed him by the collar and jerked him closer. He twisted the clerk's shirt and tie so that they tightened around his neck and cut off the squawk he tried to make.
Listen to me, you little pissant. You use that mouth to sass me again, I'll pull the tongue right out of it. You understand?
Yes, sir.
The fellow who sent those messages a few minutes ago, he was medium-sized but looked a little bigger, wearing jeans and a buckskin shirt with a tan Stetson. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Settle down or I'll twist your head right off your neck. Let me see the wires he sent.
I can't. Against regulations.
You want to get choked to death over some rules in a book? I wouldn't.
The clerk reached behind him, felt around on the desk where his telegraph key was located, and grabbed up a handful of message forms. He pressed them into Parmalee's other hand. Parmalee let go of him, and the clerk slumped back in his chair, breathing hard. Parmalee glanced at the messages Morgan had sent, and as he scanned the words, his anger grew. He tossed the flimsies back into the operator's cubicle.
I wasn't here, and I never saw those telegrams.
Believe me, I've already forgotten I ever saw you, mister.
A few minutes later, Parmalee was knocking on the door of Carter's office. When the railroad executive opened it, he scowled at Parmalee.
I told you, the two of us don't need to be seen together. You're not supposed to come here during the day.
Parmalee walked in, forcing Carter to step back. Carter shut the door.
Just who the hell are you trying to fool? Everybody knows you're the one who wants those farmers run off their land. Hell, you took the sheriff out there this morning to look for Bonner.
There's no evidence that Bonner works for you. Hence, no evidence connecting me to you.
Ah, you paper pushers are all alike. You worry about little things so much you don't even see trouble stampeding right at you.
What are you talking about?
Frank Morgan.
The gunman hired by those farmers?
Duncan and his bunch didn't hire Morgan. If he's siding with them, it's because he thinks they're in the right and he wants to. He doesn't just sell his gun to whoever's got the money.
Unlike some.
Morgan's in town. He sent some wires over at the Western Union office. Some of them went to lawyers in Denver and San Francisco, asking them to look into what you've been doing here and bring pressure on your bosses to rein you in. One went to the Justice Department in Washington, and another to the U.S. Marshal's office in Wichita.
Oh, I thought this man was just a drifting gunslinger. How can he have such connections?
I've heard rumors that Morgan's really a rich man, even though he doesn't act like it. And it looks like he's got friends in high places. If his lawyers find out that you've been jacking up the freight rates even more than you were supposed to and skimming off the top, you'll be in a heap of trouble, Carter. With both your bosses and the law.
How did you know that?
How did I know what you've really been up to around here? Hell, I'm not stupid. You've been acting way too desperate for all this to be just about business. There had to be some loot involved somewhere to make it worth your while to hire me and my boys. So I guessed. And it looks like I guessed right.
Don't go prying into things that don't concern you. You get your money. That's all you should be worried about. That and dealing with this problem.
You can't afford to let Morgan run around stirring things up, that's for sure. And you still need to make certain Bonner can't talk, too. He must be out there at that so-called Elysium, or else Morgan would have let you look around. All right, there's no way around it. Morgan's got to die, and we've got to either get Bonner away from those sodbusters or kill him. And we got to take care of it now, before things have a chance to get worse.
But if Morgan has already contacted the U.S. Marshal...
Morgan and Bonner are both dead when the Marshal gets here, then there won't be much he can do about it, will there?
How are you going to manage that? Can you kill this man, Morgan, in a gunfight?
Probably. But as much as I'd like to prove that, we can't run the risk. We'll have to bushwhack Morgan. And as for Bonner, if he's out there at Elysium, he'll be dead before morning.
How can you be so sure of that?
Because I intend to burn the whole damn place to the ground.
After eating lunch, Frank checked back at the telegraph office to see if there were any replies to the wires he'd sent earlier. A different operator was on duty now, a younger man than the one who'd been there before.
What happened to the other fella? He gone to eat lunch?
Nah, he took sick and had to go home.
I hope it's nothing serious.
When I got here, he was pale and pretty shaky. Didn't look good to me.
Sorry to hear that. My name is Morgan. You have any telegrams for me?
Frank had gotten replies from the offices of his lawyers, acknowledging his wires, and saying that they would get right on his instructions, but there was nothing from Washington or Wichita.
You know where Elysium is?
That community of farmers northwest of here?
That's right.
Yeah, I know where it is.
That's where I'll be if any more replies come in for me. I'll pay to have somebody bring them out to me.
No offense, mister, but you don't look much like a sodbuster.
Well, appearances can be deceiving.
Frank headed back toward Elysium. It would take the marshal a couple of days to get here from Wichita, and that was if the lawman started out right away. That meant the farmers had to keep Bonner safe for that long. Frank didn't expect Carter and Parmalee to allow that to happen without them trying to free Bonner, or kill him, if it came to that. Frank didn't react immediately when he saw a woman come running out of a clump of cottonwoods next to the trail ahead of him. He waited to see what was going to happen.
Help me! Oh my God, help me, mister!
Frank reined in and dismounted quickly, drawing his gun as soon as his boots were on the ground. The woman's blonde hair was tangled, and her dress was torn in several places. A bruise stood out startlingly against the pale skin of her cheek. Blood leaked from the corner of her mouth. She had been roughly handled, that was for sure.
What happened, ma'am? Who did this to you?
In there, in the trees. Two men. They grabbed me, made me drive my wagon under the trees. Then they assaulted me. Oh, don't let them get me again.
Frank's first thought had been that this was a trap. Parmalee and his men wanted to lure him into the cottonwoods so they could bushwhack him. But the woman's injuries were obviously real, and she seemed to be genuinely terrified.
Your wagon's still in there?
Yes, I guess. They may have taken it.
How'd you get away from them?
I passed out. Fainted, I reckon. And when I woke up, they were pawing through the supplies in the back of the wagon, not paying any attention to me. I crawled into the brush and then got up and ran. I wasn't sure where I was going or if I was even going in the right direction, but then I came out on the road and saw you.
Her story had the ring of truth to it.
Stay here. If anybody but me comes out of those trees, get on my horse and get the hell out of here as fast as you can.
What are you going to do?
See about settling the score with those two hombres.
Don't! They'll kill you. Maybe you better just take me back to town.
If I do that, they'll be long gone by the time anybody can get back out here. Don't worry about me, ma'am. I can take care of myself.
Frank turned and stalked toward the cottonwoods, gun in hand. He had just reached the edge of the trees when he heard the metallic ratcheting of a Winchester's lever behind him. Frank spun around in time to see that the woman had pulled his rifle from the saddle boot and leveled it at him. Flame licked from the muzzle as she fired. At the same time, more shots blasted from the trees.
It's a damn trap.
The woman had played her role to the hilt, taken him in, sure enough, and he mentally cursed himself for believing her story. Frank triggered twice and saw one of the men driven backwards by the bullets. The other man lunged aside, still triggering wildly.
Ah, damn it!
One of the slugs hit the ground beside Frank's head and knocked grit into his eye. Blinded momentarily, he scrambled toward a fallen tree he had noticed a second earlier and threw himself behind it, grateful for the cover. With his free hand, he knuckled the dirt out of his eyes while bullets thudded into the trunk of the tree. He blinked until his vision cleared. That happened just in time, because a rustling to Frank's right told him that somebody was trying to flank him. Since one of the would-be killers was still firing in front of him, that meant the man he had wounded a minute earlier wasn't hit badly enough to knock him out of the fight. Frank twisted toward the flank and spotted him through the brush. The attacker collapsed on the ground and kicked feebly a couple of times before falling still. The other man took advantage of the distraction to rush Frank's position. He burst out of the brush, leaped onto the log, and fired down at the drifter at almost point-blank range. None of the hastily fired shots found him, and when Frank's Colt roared, he was firing at close range too. The bullet caught the second gunman in the chest and flipped him backward off the log. Frank pushed himself to his feet and carefully checked the two men, both of whom were dead. He hadn't forgotten about the woman, but she wasn't shooting at him anymore, and he figured that she had fled after opening the ball. Frank froze for a second as he saw the woman lying motionless beside the trail, the Winchester near her where she had dropped it.
Damn.
Frank hadn't fired any shots toward the woman, so he knew that a stray bullet from one of the other bushwhackers must have struck her. She had lied to him and tried to shoot him in the back. But despite that, he was bothered by what had happened to her. It was possible she was still alive, so he strode quickly toward her, thumbing fresh cartridges into his peacemaker as he did so. He holstered his gun and dropped to one knee beside her. Reaching out, he grasped her shoulders and rolled her gently onto her back. He barely had time to see the little pocket pistol in her hand as she jerked it up toward him.
Bastard!
Frank had no idea how much time had passed when he finally climbed up out of the red-streaked blackness that had claimed him. His head throbbed terribly, and when he forced his eyes open, he had a bad moment when he thought he was blind because darkness was still all around him. But then he saw some faint pinpricks of light and recognized them as stars. It was dark because night had fallen. He had been lying here unconscious beside the trail all afternoon. He lifted a hand to his head and found the sticky gash on his right temple. The shot fired by the woman had grazed him there, knocking him out cold for hours. But while he was unconscious, why hadn't she gone ahead and finished him off? He saw the answer to that question as he looked around. The woman still lay beside him. He reached over and touched her cheek. It was cold and lifeless. The starlight was bright enough to reveal the large dark stain on her dress.
Lucky again, Morgan. You bought this woman's story, and in return she put a hole in your Stetson, and almost your head.
The shot she had fired at him must have been her last act of defiance as life slipped away from her. Frank spotted the dun grazing contentedly about 20 yards away.
If Stormy had been here, he would have nudged me and woke me up before now. You got a lot to learn.
Despite the pain in his head, Frank's brain was working swiftly. The attempt on his life had been well orchestrated. He had no doubt that Carter and Parmalee were behind it. The fact that he had been bushwhacked on his way back to Elysium told him that his enemies didn't want him to reach the farming community. Carter and Parmalee probably had something planned for Horace and the others tonight, and they didn't want Frank to interfere with it. Frank picked up the rifle and slid it back into the saddle boot. He didn't like leaving the bodies of the woman and the two gunmen where they lay, but he didn't have time to take them back to Salina.
I hope you're ready to run, my friend. We gotta get back to Elysium as fast as we can.
So, Carter and Parmalee knew what he was doing, and they were spooked. That didn't surprise Frank. He had halfway expected that his visit to town would goad them into taking action. He hadn't figured that their attempt to get rid of him would come quite so close to being successful, though. Whatever else Carter and Parmalee planned to do, he was still around to stop it. But only if he got back to Elysium in time. And as he suddenly noticed a red glow in the sky that wasn't left over from the setting sun, a chill went through him as he realized that he might already be too late. The plan should have worked. Morgan was soft-hearted toward women. Parmalee had heard that often enough. And he had knocked Sadie around himself before riding off, just to make sure that she looked like a genuine damsel in distress. He hadn't particularly enjoyed it, no matter what sneering comments the whore had made about him liking to beat on women. It was just business. Anyway, she had been quick enough to accept the payoff he'd offered her, and she had even volunteered to take a shot at Morgan herself.
Shouldn't Briggs and Whistler be here by now?
Yes.
Parmalee had left the two gunnies with Sadie to set up the ambush for Morgan, while he and the rest of the men went on to wait near Elysium until night had fallen.
Maybe they didn't kill the son of a bitch after all, boss.
Shut up!
That possibility worried Parmalee more than he cared to admit. When Briggs and Whistler hadn't shown up by nightfall, Parmalee figured that something had gone wrong.
If Morgan was still alive, he'd have been here by now.
Maybe the bushwhackers had gotten enough lead in Morgan to kill him, but he had lived long enough to down them too. Could be all three of them were lying there dead, about halfway between Elysium and Salina. Sadie already had her money. She would have headed back to Salina rather than coming out here to tell Parmalee what had happened.
You sure all the boys are clear with the plan?
Yes, sir. You sure we needed all these men, though? 20 riders for these sodbusters seems like a lot.
You worry about the plan, I'll do the thinking.
We're ready, boss. We ride in, start shooting and yelling to scare the hell out of them, and we spread the coal all around and light it up.
Okay, I guess we're about ready then.
Boss, we're gonna rescue Bonner, aren't we?
If we can. But if we don't, it was his dumb fault for getting caught. Get your masks on, boys. You got those torches and the kegs of coal oil?
Those damn farmers are gonna think hellfire and brimstone's raining down on them from heaven.
More like gushing up from hell. That's right! Light the torches!
Matches were held to the oil-soaked cotton. It caught readily. Flames leaped up.
Give him hell!
Frank heard the shooting before he could see anything except the glow from the fires. But a couple of minutes later, he came in sight of the community, and his fears were confirmed. Several of the houses were on fire, and so were a couple of the barns. But more than half of the structures still stood. To a certain extent, the farmers had been able to fight off Parmalee's attack. Frank saw riders galloping around, waving torches over their heads as they attempted to spread the flames.
Nice of you boys to give me such well-lit targets.
Frank laid the barrel of his Winchester across the saddle, using that to steady the weapon as he aimed. The Dun didn't seem to be the sort of horse that spooked easily.
Hold steady for me now, big boy.
A couple of hundred yards distant, one of the torch-wielding Knight Riders pitched out of his saddle. The torch slipped from his fingers and spun through the air to land in the dirt and gutter out. Even before the echo of the shot had rolled away across the prairie, Frank had levered another round into the Winchester's chamber and drawn a bead on another of the raiders. He fired again and was rewarded by the sight of the man falling and dropping the torch he carried. In a matter of heartbeats, Frank had shot yet another man out of the saddle. Three of the raiders were down in less than a minute.
Well, now that got their attention. Let's get down there, big boy.
Wheeling the Dun, he rode off at an angle. He couldn't go into the fight head-on, now that they knew he was out here. Circling rapidly, Frank headed toward Elysium from a different direction. He didn't draw his gun until he was nearly among the buildings. Then, with the peacemaker in his hand, Frank charged toward a couple of the hooded riders.
It's Morgan!
The second man tried to bring the revolver's barrel around toward Frank, but the move came too late. He fell against the other man. Flames shot into the air, brightly hideous as they raced up the duster of the first man. Some of the coal oil from the keg he carried must have sloshed out onto his clothes. In no more than a second, he had become a human torch. Frank put the man out of his screaming agony with a bullet through the head.
Let's go!
Frank had no time to waste as he wheeled the gun and looked for more targets. He found three of them galloping toward him, guns spouting flame. Frank hauled back on the Dun's reins so that the horse reared up and pawed at the air with its front hooves. He fired three times and saw all three saddles empty. At moments such as this, in the heat of battle, Frank was a creature of almost pure instinct. He brought the Dun down and whirled the horse around as he heard hoofbeats behind him. Using the last round in his peacemaker, Frank blasted a man out of the saddle. Frank took the attackers by surprise and spurred the Dun into a leap that carried him right into the middle of them. Frank's hand shot out, closed on the collar of the duster worn by one of the men, and jerked him right off his horse. An iron-shod hoof stepped in the middle of his forehead and caved it in. Frank knocked a six-gun aside as it blasted and smashed his fist into the gunman's face. He plucked the gun from the stunned man's hand and used it to ventilate another of the raiders. He was a one-man army, and his efforts were allowing the citizens of Elysium to begin to fight the fires that threatened to consume their community.
Morgan!
Parmalee.
Frank squeezed off the shot, but another hooded rider accidentally darted between him and Parmalee and took the bullet.
Damn it!
Parmalee seemed to realize the suicidal nature of his charge. He yanked his horse around and fled. The rest of the surviving raiders followed their leader, as Elysium's defenders peppered them with lead from rifles and shotguns. Frank galloped toward Horace Duncan's house. The place had been spared the flames, and as Frank brought the Dun to a halt in front of the house, Mildred came out onto the porch, a rifle in her hands.
Mr. Morgan, thank God you're here. Have you seen Horace?
He wasn't in the house with you?
No, he ran outside with his shotgun when the trouble started. He said he was going to find Parmalee and dust his hide with buckshot.
I'll find him.
Frank wheeled his horse and headed for the nearest burning building, where men had formed a bucket brigade and were dousing the flames with buckets of water drawn from one of the community's wells.
Anybody seen Horace Duncan?
He headed that way!
Frank ran toward another building that was on fire. The conflagration lit the night brightly and cast a hellish glare over everything. Several of the raiders lay on the ground, unmoving. Frank saw some of the community's defenders lying there too, and knew that Elysium had paid a high price to drive off the hooded riders. One of the men sprawled face down on the ground looked familiar.
Horace.
Frank? You got here.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't in time to stop Parmalee from attacking in the first place. Come on, Horace. I'll help you up and get you back to your house.
The fires.
Your friends are fighting them. You're in no shape to help out right now. Well, let's get you home and let Mildred tend to that shoulder.
Oh, Parmalee.
Gone, and his men with him. The ones who were still alive, that is.
Got some of them, did we?
You sure did. Where do you want me to put him, Mildred?
Frank had been able to support Horace as they walked unsteadily toward the house, as some of the women of the community were hurrying to tend to the other wounded men.
Oh, just help him lie down on the divan. That's the closest place.
Oh, I get blood all over it.
You think I care about something like that right now? You just hush up, Horace Duncan, and let me worry about things.
Oh.
Where's Bonner?
Still in the spare bedroom. When the shooting started, Horace knew we'd need all our men to fight off Parmalee, so he tied up Bonner real good. That way no one would have to stand guard over him.
You're a smart man, Horace.
Horace, hold still.
I'm fine, dear.
Well, you don't look...
Frank found Bonner lying in the bed, with so much rope wrapped around him so tightly he looked like a pig all trussed up for market. Bonner had a gag in his mouth, and his eyes were wide with fear above it.
Don't worry, Bonner. Parmalee's gone. The folks here in Elysium stopped him before he could get in here and shut your mouth permanently. That's what he was after, you know. If he could have gotten to you, he would have put a bullet through your head, just to make sure you couldn't testify against him and Carter. And smell that smoke? Parmalee tried to burn down the whole settlement. You think he would have bothered trying to get you out if this place had gone up in flames? There. Now you can talk.
All right, I'll talk, Morgan. I'll tell the law about the whole thing, about how Carter hired Parmalee to buffalo these sobbusters into not making trouble for him. And that ain't all. Carter's been stealing from the railroad, I reckon. That's what Parmalee thinks anyway, and I bet he's right. I'll testify to all that.
What brought you around to the right way of thinking, Bonner?
I smelled that smoke. I smelled it, and I know Parmalee wanted me dead. I could just imagine laying there, all tied up and helpless, while I started burning. I knew then that Parmalee would kill me before he'd ever let me talk to the law. I can't let him get away with that, Morgan. I didn't kill nobody, I swear it. I'm not gonna hang, and I'm not gonna let Parmalee kill me.
That's smart thinking, Bonner. There's a U.S. Marshal on the way. You can tell your story to him when he gets here.
Good, because that sheriff and Selena ain't gonna cross Carter. He's too scared of the railroad.
I know. That's why I sent for the marshal. Time he gets here, though, there may not be as many varmints left to arrest.
Well, why's that, Morgan?
Because Parmalee and his men destroyed nearly half of Elysium tonight and killed some innocent men. And he set up an ambush for me that resulted in a woman dying. It's time that he and I settle this thing once and for all.
What should we do now, Parmalee?
Better drift to other parts. With the U.S. Marshal coming in and Bonner still alive to talk, this job is over.
What are you gonna do, boss?
Never you mind about me. Just spread out and lie low for a while. I reckon you'll probably be safe enough from the law. Things will die down sooner or later. Maybe we can all work together again one of these days.
The men nodded in agreement and lifted hands in farewell as they rode off in different directions. Parmalee waited until they were all gone, then headed on into Salina. He would need money if he was going to be on the run for a while, and he suspected that Carter had quite a bit of loot stashed in his office. Parmalee rode straight to the building leased by the railroad. He wasn't surprised to see that there was a light in Carter's window.
So, Mr. Carter, you're waiting up to hear a report. Well, you're not going to like what you're about to hear, but to tell you the truth, I don't give a damn.
Parmalee drew his gun and used the barrel to rap on the window of Carter's office. By the time he got to the door, he heard the key rattling in the lock on the other side. Carter swung the door open.
Well, what happened? Did you get Bonner out of there or...
Or did you kill him? That was what Carter was asking.
Let me in and I'll tell you all about it.
Without waiting for Carter to step aside, Parmalee shouldered his way in.
Must we move right to rudeness? Can't you for once tell me what I need to know? What?
Parmalee still had his gun in his hand. He swung around and lifted the weapon so that it pointed at Carter.
What are you doing?
That money you skimmed off the railroad. I want it.
I don't know what you're talking about. What happened at Elysium?
Everything went wrong. That's what happened. Morgan ruined it all. We burned some buildings and gunned down a few of those sodbusters, but I lost over half my men, and Elysium's still standing, damn it. And Bonner's still alive to testify against us.
Carter seemed to sink involuntarily into his desk chair, face turning ashen with fear.
Oh, but Morgan sent for the U.S. Marshal. When he gets here, if Bonner talks to him...
That's right, we're done for. That's why I'm getting the hell out tonight, and I want that loot before I go.
I swear, I never stole from the railroad.
Don't bother lying to me, you weaselly little bastard. Just hand over the money and I won't kill you.
I'll testify against you.
Now, was that the smart thing to say?
I don't... Oh, God.
Don't worry. Give me what I want, and I'll still let you live. See, I'm not scared of you or anything you might say, Carter. With the loot you're going to give me, I can make it to the border and live for a long time in Mexico, long enough for the law to forget all about me. So you see, I don't have any real reason to kill you, as long as you cooperate.
Oh, all right. The money is under a loose floorboard, there, in the corner.
You get it. Just because I don't plan on killing you unless I have to doesn't mean that I trust you.
Carter went to the corner, reached down, and pried up the floorboard he had pointed out. Underneath it, in a space between the floor and the subfloor, were several canvas bags. He pulled them out and set them on the floor, all except the last one. That one he kept in his hands as he turned toward Parmalee.
I'll show you. It's all in cash.
As Carter reached into the bag, Parmalee fired. Carter managed to get his hand around the butt of the little pistol hidden inside the canvas bag, the pistol that had given the bag a different shape from the others and tipped off Parmalee. Carter was even able to fire a shot, but the bullet thudded harmlessly into the planks as Carter slid down the wall.
I would have let you live if you hadn't tried that, you stupid bastard.
Parmalee holstered his gun and gathered up the other bags. Moving quickly, he opened them and dumped the bundles of banded-together bills onto the desk. He stuffed as many of them into his pockets as he could and raked the rest back into one of the bags. He could carry that easier. It was late enough, and Celina was civilized enough now, that the pair of shots might draw some attention, so Parmalee didn't linger. He cast one last glance at Carter, then left the office and went back into the alley to get his horse. He tied the canvas bag to the saddle and mounted up. Just before he reached the mouth of the alley, he reined in sharply. He heard hoofbeats coming along the street, moving at a fairly fast clip.
Damn it!
Parmalee swung down quickly and stepped to the corner of the building. He eased forward just enough to look along the street. His hand went to his gun as he saw the approaching rider pass through the light that came from the windows of a saloon. Parmalee recognized the hat, the broad-shouldered figure, and the dun horse.
Morgan!
Parmalee's lips drew back from his teeth in a savage expression that was half grimace, half cruel grin.
Come on, Morgan. I'm ready for you, you interfering son of a bitch. Ready for you to die,